Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Gravel Junction podcast, your meeting place for all things bikes, adventures, and the stories that follow. I'm your host, Charles Detmer. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Gravel Junction. As always, great to have you back. A couple of weeks since our last show, a few things been going on outside of podcast world. Couple cancelled shows or recordings here and there, and a bit of travelling, but we're back with today's show. Is episode number 3 in our ongoing mini-series, chatting to the wonderful Boru McCullough, who is making his way around the world on his trusty bicycle. Last time we spoke to Boru was about 6 weeks ago, when he had just arrived in India, and this recording we find him in Vietnam. I've really come to sort of look forward to these conversations, and I dare say Boru has alluded to feeling the same. It's just wonderful to sit down and live vicariously through him, his adventures and his experiences and the changes that he is going through as a now well-seasoned traveler on the bicycle. Yeah, so we just sat down, had a very informal conversation about the last 6 weeks, what he's been up to, how he's feeling physically, mentally, and what comes next. We also discuss, obviously, one of the main reasons he's doing the ride, his mind mapping charity, which is, I believe, at about just over £8,000. So well up there with its goal of £10,000, which should hopefully be met or reached before the end of the year. But let me not chat too much longer. We'll catch up again at the end of the show after our little chat. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Boru McCullough. Enjoy. Man, how are you, man? It feels like it's been ages.
Yeah, it has been a while. It's probably been like, what, month and a half, just under two, just...
Yeah, probably what, 6 weeks? Yeah, it's gone by so quickly. I mean, the last time we spoke, you just got to India. And now, where are you?
Yeah, I don't even know the name of the town, somewhere in Vietnam.
Okay. And how are you? How so much to catch up on, but so much has happened since we last spoke. I guess we just start with kind of, how are you right now?
Right now, I'm pretty knackered. It was a really, really long day and it was raining for a lot of it.
I saw your stories this morning just covered in mud.
Yeah. And you know, when you just ride in the rain so much and it makes your body tired in a different way. It makes your eyes heavy. It makes you feel heavy.
Totally.
So it was a good day. Or it was going very well. And then it went so wrong.
Were you not able to get the administrative tasks completed?
No, unfortunately not. Oh. They were pretty hard on it at the border. I mean, to explain what I was trying to do, you can do... Because the tourist visa for Vietnam is 1 month, and I think you can get a longer one, or you can extend it once you're here. But I didn't do that when I was in Hanoi, because I was busy letting all the steam out my system that I'd built up over, 2 months of riding. So I didn't want to do anything then. And then, so what I'm doing now, it's called a border run. So it's basically when you leave to a neighboring country and then come back in on a brand new visa. So you can, be here for another month. But I got to the border and they wouldn't let me leave because I didn't have a visa for Laos. But everything that I read said that you could just get a visa on arrival for Laos. So I don't know what's happening there. And they weren't very helpful. I was trying to translate stuff, and rather than reading it, they just said, no, go to Lao Bao, which is another land border 400 kilometers south of here. And again, typing in, I don't even need to go into Laos. Please, can you just give me an exit stamp so that I can come back in on this new visa that I have with me and can show you right now? I won't step foot into Laos, I promise. And they're like, no, Lao Bao. And it's like, And by that point, it was half four. And it starts getting dark around.
I mean, how long was the journey to get there today?
It was 95K. From Vinh, this city kind of on the coast. And it's like, it's pretty flat most of the way, but then the spine, I think they call it the spine of Vietnam. Like, so like mainly the border with Laos is very mountainous. And that road was just, it was so poor. All the roads have been really good here, but it was, yeah, just mud sludge all the way up. Cause it's constantly damp and humid. Like you get to, you know, the mist starts at 200 meters, 250 meters above sea level. So as soon as you're going up higher than that, you just can't see anything.
And that humidity gets to you. I mean, I've spent a lot of time in humid countries. It just, it drains your batteries as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I feel I'm kind of, or I thought I was used to the humidity in India, but then, wow, like I got here. And I remember the first thing that I thought when I got off the airplane was like, it kind of feels like kind of like a laundry room.
No, like riding in a hairdryer. But okay, man, I mean, so let's, we might as well kind of track back a little bit to the last time we spoke. You know, you just got through Turkey, and we'll touch a bit on, I got to see Finlay in the UK and talk a little bit about that project, which comes out or has come out already, that little film you did. So we can talk about that, but sort of, why don't you let us know, like, overall, how is it going? You know, following you on your stories, you've had a couple little incidents here and there, like as you do on the road, but overall, it's been a long time away from home now. How's the mental, the headspace after all this?
Yeah, India was very difficult. Like when I left home, you know, I always had the view that in 1 month I'd be in Istanbul with Finlay. So I never really, and Europe is so familiar. So I never really felt super far from home or from, you know, like from friends. And then I never really thought of what would happen after Istanbul. So once I actually started riding in India, I was just, it just really hit me. And that first week in India was so difficult because the country's so intense and everyone's so friendly and they want to know where you're from, where you're going. And they all ask if you're traveling like alone. You know, they say, oh, are you with someone? Are you by yourself? Where are you from? The UK? And kind of repeating that so many times kind of made me realize, wow, I'm traveling by myself and I'm a long way from home.
Did you feel quite exposed at that, like, times?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Because
like you say, it's not like necessarily a safety thing, but I've been in India, as you say, intense is the right word, you know, so you vulnerable, there's almost like a vulnerability, because you get asked so much of the same question so many times, eventually you start thinking to yourself, as you say, oh shit. Yeah. I am very alone and far away from home.
Yeah. And like, I loved when people ask it because I think people in India, they're so like unashamed of being curious. And I think that's amazing. You know, in the UK or in the West, like, you know, you don't stare at people. If you kind of want to look at something, if someone sees you, you kind of look away and pretend like you're not doing that. But that's not the case there. You know, people are curious and that's part of learning. So everyone looks, everyone asks questions. And yeah, at first that was very intense because it's like nothing that I've experienced before. But then, yeah, then it really grew on me. And I really loved India. It took a couple of weeks to get to that point, but it's a very special place.
And did you change your plans slightly there was certain sections of India where just the roads and the highways, it was kind of, it didn't make for the safest riding. Is that correct? And you kind of moved a little bit quicker to get to the mountainous sort of mountainous parts of the country?
Yeah, not necessarily because it was unsafe is why I did that. Like the drivers there are great. You know, I've ridden for a long time, so it's so fun to ride in the traffic in India. Because everyone's also curious because they don't see someone looking like you on a bike looking like yours does. So, you know, they're not going to treat you exactly how they treat, you know, another driver that they know knows their rules. So I really enjoyed that. You know, truck drivers, all the drivers, they give you lots of space, you know, more so than they do in Kent. So it was more because the route that I had, to get across the country in that time, it meant I had to like be really strict and regimented with how much I had to ride each day. And after that first week, I just realized that was the worst way to do it, because it's hard to cycle through a place where there's like so much life that you can't stop. You know, and there's
so you end up not taking it in, right?
Yeah.
It just becomes a tick box exercise to tick off the miles, but the experience then suffers because of it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not about the miles or how far you go. It's about, you know, putting yourself in places where you have no idea what's going on and figuring it out and meeting people and talking about what they do in their life and what you do in your life. And, you know, there are parts of this ride where I know it's going to be ticking off miles, you know, so like cycling across Australia, it's going to be very boring.
Long straight roads.
Yeah, exactly. But that's because there's like nothing around, you know, the road at the beginning of the Nullarbor looks exactly the same as it does at the end, and there's not much in between. But when there's so much life, and like the population of India is just insanely huge, so there's always things going on, there's, you know, festivals going on, and yeah, it's just hard to kind of look at the road when you can see that happening either side of you. So yeah, I decided to drive a big section of it.
And you're glad you did? You were able to enjoy it a lot more?
Yeah, I kind of felt a bit guilty for it at first, but I would have just really, you know, the way it was going, I didn't even have, you know, leeway to get ill. You know, so if I got sick, I would have been like, I'm really screwed now.
But I think I can understand why you would, you know, because you have this idea of, you know, riding around the world, and then there's this, these self-imposed restrictions, if you will, like, oh, have I done it properly if I, you know, catch a bus for a couple of miles here and there. But I also think with what we've spoken about in the previous times we've spoken, that your reason for doing this is different, right? This is not a Phileas Fogg 80 days around the world trip. This is about the experience of these places and making sure by the time you do get around the globe and you're back home, that when you look back at that map, you have like real bookmarked.
Well, so I've got memories. I've got memories in those places that isn't just the road and the cycling. You know, there's so much more than that. And I think in particular, like, that's because I, you know, in a sense, this is, you know, I'm a tourist in these places, and that's the way it should be. Like, you should have these experiences to look back on, and not everything's just like a transaction of something that you want to do, but it's the people that you want to meet, and that goes so much, it's like so far beyond that. And I met some amazing people in India. Like, I'd heard, you know, obviously people saying things about scammers or this or that, but I think because I wasn't in like the Northwest or like the big, huge mega cities, so like Delhi or Bangalore, like I didn't experience that. Like, and when people did help me, they didn't want anything for it. So
so many of your posts where you just see where, you know, free food, free drink, and you give it a lift, like people just, the generosity just seemed boundless.
Yeah, they're such kind people. Like, I think it is the first place I'll have to go back to.
Really?
Yeah, for sure. On a way longer visa.
Where is there anywhere in particular that has really sort of stuck out for you as like that struck a chord with you?
In India, I think I'd like to go and see more of the Northeast. So there's that. So I went to Sikkim, which was, you know, the bit that kind of dips into the Himalayas. And
is that the part with all the lovely street signs, with all the messages, all the road signs?
Yeah, that was actually in West Bengal, which kind of borders it.
Okay.
But so then to the east, you've got Assam, which is the state that I finished in and flew to Vietnam from. But then just below that, you've got Meghalaya, which people describe to me as the Scotland of India, because it's just like insanely beautiful. And there's a big mountain biking scene there. Like, I finished at a really great shop called Spoke Hub Cycling, and they were pretty quiet at the time because they had this like big event on that weekend, doing like downhill mountain biking, and I didn't see much of that, you know, in India. You know, bikes are a means of transport, and it was only in, I think it was only in Mumbai, that I saw, you know, cycling groups or people
like social, you know, cycling.
Doing it is more than a means of transportation. You know, doing it as a hobby and a sport and a social space. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like I was getting a coffee and there was like a women's cycling group all going out, and then as I was leaving, I saw these other people on their bikes going out. And you know, that's also because Mumbai relatively is a pretty large percentage of India's GDP. So you know, people have that time and that disposable income to like to spend on that, which I guess they also do up in the northeast. Like Sikkim it's got one of the smallest populations of the state, but it has one of the highest GDPs. So you could tell it was still way cheaper compared to like Europe, but compared to the rest of India, it was more expensive.
And like day to day, were you mainly staying at hotels or hostels because it was cheap enough compared to, you know, wild camping? I don't think that was much of that's not really a thing in India, is it, sleeping wild?
No, it's, I mean, you could, but I don't.
Might get a snake in your sleeping bag.
I would have just had like 200 people around me by the time I'd finished setting up my tent. Yeah, honestly. So I stayed in, they call them like lodges. They're just, yeah, like cheap places to sleep for a night.
I think other tourists, like what was the tourist scene like post-COVID, etc.? You imagine a country like India, a lot of pilgrims, if you will, going through those parts of the world. Did you see a lot of other tourists, or was it quite quiet?
No, none at all. I think I saw two Americans at the border going into Sikkim. Because Sikkim, you have to get your passport stamped and everything. It's a protected area, and it's, you know, it's close to kind of three major borders. Mm. So they got to really keep tabs on who's going there. So when I was getting that done, I saw these two Americans. But apart from that, maybe like two other foreign tourists. Loads of domestic tourists. But not many foreigners. Because I think a lot of people go up to the northwest. You know, they go to Rajasthan, right, or Delhi or Ladakh, where.
Right, okay.
Because I think Rajasthan is where there's all those like temples and like forts and that sort of thing, which a lot of people go to. Mm-hmm. But you know, I was in areas where they're like, "What are you doing here?" Like, not
this
in
blonde British guy on his bike with bags on it.
Yeah, like not in any negative way, you know. Like I say, they're just like,
"Oh, you
unashamed,
lost."
Unashamed of their curiosity, they're just like, "What on earth are you doing here? Nobody comes here."
Was there a reason you went there?
It was just on the way.
There you go. Yeah. And then, so where did you fly out of? And you say you flew to Vietnam, which is where you are now, correct?
Yeah, so I flew from Guwahati, which is I think it's the capital of Assam, and then went via Kolkata to Hanoi, and then I spent a week in Hanoi to rest. But I probably came out of that week more tired than I did going into it, if I'm honest.
Yeah, what's Hanoi like? Just crazy city, or?
Yeah, it's really there's great museums. So many, like there's loads that I didn't get to see. But it's very, especially in the old quarter, it's so touristy. It was a real shock, you know, coming from India, where, you know, I'd seen two other white people for the last month, two other tourists. And then because the flight was delayed and it was a very long layover, I ended up arriving in Hanoi at like 5 a.m. So I slept most that first day. Got to about 6 p.m., woke up. It's like, yeah, I'll go on a walk. I'll see what the city's like at night. And like, I went down this street, because in the old quarter, every single street sells like one item. So there's one street that just sells Christmas decorations, or one street that just sells padlocks, or one street that like just sells like a, is it called a faucet for a tap?
Yes, yes.
And I went down Beer Street, which is where all the tourists go to get drunk. And I was just like, I was just so overwhelmed, like after so long, kind of not seeing that, like seeing that side of tourism.
Is it like the cliche where you see like a lot of Brits and Aussies and that sort of demographic, or was just all mixed?
It's all mixed. Yeah, there's a lot of Dutch. Met a lot of Dutch people. Okay. But yeah, lots of Brits. You can hear the Brits before you see them.
Yeah, the Brits see it in the little singlets so and the tattoos out.
Yeah, they're so loud.
That's funny. Yeah, it was like that when I was in Thailand. We were sailing a boat from Thailand back to Europe, and we spent a little while there. You see and hear the Brits long. So you hear them long before you see them.
Yeah,
it's quite funny. But also, when you, as you say, you've not seen Westerners for that long, it sticks out like a sore thumb, I imagine. So there must be a certain comfort to that. And then, so you took a week off there now and then, but how's the body handling up? Like, obviously your routine must be down pat. This is your everyday now, but are you feeling fatigue? Like physically, how are you going?
It's been really weird. And I'm not sure why, you know, like when I left Hanoi that first day, I was like, wow, this is what it feels like to ride a bike again. And it was really difficult. And then I kind of found a rhythm, but very quickly it was up in the mountains in the north. And yeah, like the mountains here, they're just super steep. All the roads are so steep. And it's quite funny because they always have road signs. Like they always have a 10% road sign, and it's never accurate. So if you see 10%, it just means this is a very steep road.
Minimum of 10%.
Yeah, yeah. So that was quite hard. And I think that shocked me. That shocked my system a lot. And I felt very, very fatigued.
Have you got rid of any gear yet? Or are you still riding? Like, I remember Finney saying your bike is pretty loaded.
Yeah, I did leave my cooking equipment with the bike shop in India. Yeah. Because I didn't use it at all in India. Mm. Like why?
Yeah. All the street food.
Yeah, exactly. Why would I find some rice and cook it myself when I can, you know, buy it for next to nothing, and it'd be way better than anything I can do. And it's the same here, really. And that's why I left it, because it's super cheap to get a bowl of food or some rice or like a banh mi or something.
All right. What are the next 2 months sort of hold in store? What's the plan? Where to next?
Well, I'm not quite sure, because it depends on this whole visa situation which would mean that I can stay in Vietnam for longer, which I really want to do. It's an amazing country, and I really like the language, and I'm like, more than anywhere I've been so far, I'm trying to like learn more and more phrases. And so I really want to stay here and probably be here for Christmas. But it depends if this other border, which I need to get to in like the next 2 days, which is basically 200 kilometer days. So I have to be up early.
Big days.
Yeah. It depends if I can get the Lao visa to then leave and then come back into Vietnam. Because then if not, then I'll have to get a bus down to Cambodia so I can leave the country. I don't want to overstay a visa. I don't know what kind of implications that has on future.
It's just not worth it. Yeah. It's just not worth it, as you say. All right.
So my current visa expires in 4 days. So it's like, okay, if I get there in 2 days and they deny me, then at least I have another 2 days to get out the country. And then it's just carrying on down to Singapore. So once I get to Thailand, and as you said, when you went there, you can hear the Brits before you see them. And I've heard from everyone that the south of Thailand is very much like that. And the north is much more relaxed.
Yeah, the south is the touristy, and even like, you know, like I don't know if you've been to Singapore, but like Singapore's crazy, this crazy place, you know, don't throw your chewing gum on the floor. Like really clean, really tidy. We actually did a shipyard period there on the north of the island, and these shipyards build these big oil tankers, and we were there, we were this little 80 meter yacht with these 5,000 man shipyard.
Wow.
And they all come from Malaysia, so they all come from there. Oh, there's a bridge joining Malaysia, coming over the mainland, and you just see these 5,000 ship workers come on bicycles in the morning into the shipyard. It's just the sheer which you would have experienced in India, I'm sure, the volumes of people. Right? It's just so different. It's packed. And I don't know how you found, but I found with my time in Asia, personal space is very different to what it is in in the Western world.
Yeah. In a really refreshing way, you know, people just don't care about like that sort
they're
of
inquisitive,
stuff.
Aren't they? There's a genuine innocence to it, but they want to know. They're fascinated.
Yeah, you're right. There is an innocence to it. Like I remember in India, I was like taking a photo with someone, and then like they just like grabbed my hand and held my hand in it and like pulled me really close, and I was like, wow, this is like. This is
you're in my space now. Okay, we're doing this.
Yeah, but like I say, it's quite refreshing because it's just something where, the UK is just so.
We're brought up differently, aren't we, in the West? Where it's kind of like don't make eye contact, just do you know, stay in your bubble, do your thing. And I imagine it's going to be. And I'm projecting a little bit, but I can see when you get back to the UK. It's going to be a bit of a culture shock in a lot of ways because it's going to be so different.
I've been thinking about this so much recently in that I think when I get back home, I'll see London for the first time as a tourist. Like I'm expecting it to feel very different because of all these kind of other ways of living that I'm being exposed to in ways that I wouldn't back home.
And even things that you took for granted in London, you will probably be, you'll either be put off by or appreciative of, you know, things that you just took for granted every day that will be at your disposal, whether that be public transport or whatever. You as you say, you'll see it through different eyes, which that's what travel brings you, doesn't it? It brings you that perspective, which allows you to gain more out of your own home space when you do head back. But I do suppose you would have gone through a lot of Western countries before you get home, right? Because it's Australia, the US.
I don't think I'll do the US.
Okay, you're going to do anymore. South.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm getting more and more certain of that. Mm.
I can understand that because listening to you talk now about your current experiences and that absorbing that culture, like I'm not sure how much time you spent in the States. It's a fascinating country, but it's a Western, you know, it's the most Westernized country in the world.
Yeah.
So it would, things would be a lot easier. If you have a problem, just jump on Amazon, fix it. And I suppose that would take away from it. Whereas South America, the infrastructure is still incredible, but the cultural differences between the countries there for the same landmass as the US, you know, the South America's got so many countries, so many different cultures that the cultural richness that you'd get from that would just be, you know, would leave a mark.
And cycling is such a popular sport in South America. You know, they're like, I was in Colombia when Bernal won the Tour. He's a celebrity. You know, he's not just like an anonymous professional athlete like pro riders are, you know, in the UK. His face was plastered everywhere. Like, I remember there was a stage that year, I think him and Quintana were like up the road and it was them two up front. And I was in a bus station at the time and everyone stopped what they were doing, you know, and was watching that stage of the Tour. And I've heard similar things that was only in Colombia. I've heard similar things in Chile as well. So I really want to,
Chile, Ecuador, all those. I mean, where would you, I mean, everything can change, but do you see yourself sort of starting Central America, heading down and across or sort of getting straight to like Ecuador on the West Coast and then moving across sort of thing?
I'd probably actually cycle like the wrong way around the world. So I'd probably actually land in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, and then cycle north to Cartagena in Colombia.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. I mean, that would really just slice through it all, and you'd really get that. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, there's something happening in Peru, which I'd like to be in Peru for that. And if I went north to south, I'd be there too early. But if I go south to north, I might be there on time.
Is your April, was it April originally, April, May, you were looking at being back home? Is that still there, or that changes by the week?
No, that's, I mean, this event in Peru is at the end of May. So.
Right, okay. But that's a good thing, right? Because I remember last time we spoke, understandably, you were struggling with a bit of homesickness, and it was just like you were feeling very far away. Are you finding that due to these experiences you're having now in these countries, just the warm people, it's in a lot of ways is substituting and giving you that homely feeling you need to kind of press on, if that makes sense?
No, it's not substituting it. Like I still feel that homesickness like so much all the time. It's just, like I say, that first only hit me in India, like in that first week of riding, and I've just gotten better at managing it and dealing with it, and you know, telling myself things that make me feel better about feeling that way. It's not like,
is it getting out of your head? Is kind of the trick, as in like, and the riding can help, because riding can be a double edged sword in that situation, right? In that it gives you a lot of time to think about it, but also if you're able to just imagine pedals turning, it can stop you thinking about things. And is like, what sort of distances are you doing each day? If you're having a tougher day, will you tend to ride further, for example, just to sort of not sit and think?
No, if I'm having a tough day, I just tend to stop. Like that's the thing that's also kind of hit me here. It's like, some days I just don't want to ride my bike.
And that's okay. And that's the good part.
Yeah. And it kind of works because, I mean, as I've got further and further, I've gotten more comfortable with like wearing smelly kit and that. So it gives a chance to kind of just, yeah, some like this day in Hajiang, I was like, I actually just can't be bothered to ride today. So I didn't ride, washed everything, left the next day feeling great and smelling even better.
It's amazing what fresh bibs can do, though. There's nothing like, if you're having a tough time, even like a 3-day bike trip, I remember washing my kit and just, it's a couple of watts in there for sure.
I'm saying this, I'm looking over at my shorts over there, which are completely filthy and muddy from today, and I am kind of scared to put them on tomorrow
for a 200k day.
Yeah, because it's like the other two sets I've already ridden like probably like 2 or 3 days in those, so I need to get these done.
How's the equipment holding up? Equipment and kit and all of that.
Yeah, so Diverge is fine. That's that's still ticking along. All the kit's great. It's funny actually. I thought I would send the Albion Zoas up the road and send it to a friend in Melbourne, but I've probably used them here in Vietnam more than I've used them anywhere else so far.
Because it's always raining, right? Even though it's hot.
Yeah, it's so rainy. And you say it's hot, but I mean my I'm almost ashamed to say that like I find 15 degrees cold now.
It's amazing how you climatize.
Yeah, like because I've not left summer, you know. So I had that insane summer in London, and then I was in Turkey, then I was in India, and now I'm in like Hanoi was really hot, but then up in the mountains I was sat outside. And I shivered and I was like, oh my God, it must be like 10 degrees or something. And I think it was like 17 or 18. I was just like, who have I become?
I remember that in Mauritius, we'd live there and we'd go up to Kuya Pip, which was the so-called highlands, really not that high. And, you know, it was still like 18, 19 degrees, but the locals would be wearing beanies and long pants and it was freezing for them, you know, and it's crazy how you do adjust. And then you go to the UK and it's 12 degrees and people have got their shorts on.
I saw a friend put up like a story of them riding. It was like 3 degrees. I was like, I remember the days where I'd like revel in that. You know, I'd be like 3 degrees, like bring it on,
easy. Bluebird day now, 3 degrees.
Yeah, now it actually kind of scares me to go back to those temperatures.
Well, speaking of London, as I say, I did get to meet Finley at Rulo Live. Yeah. and we were chatting a little bit. And that stage, he was editing the film that he put together, you guys put together, of your time in Turkey. I think that's, has that premiere happened? I lost track.
So it premiered at World Cinema, which is in, I think it's in Loughborough Junction.
I stayed literally 200 meters from there, and I flew out a couple of days before because it's at the Four Boroughs Coffee just around there. I was going to go watch and then I couldn't. So, okay, so that's happened. And how did that all go?
Yeah, it went down really well. You know, Finley's done like such a good job at, like, he's such a good storyteller. And yeah, I feel so, like, both happy and like proud of him as one of my friends to have made what he's made and to kind of help me in that way of kind of telling that story. So it went down very well. Lots of nice messages about it. And it's been going on for so long. Like, we've had this idea for so long. So it's quite a relief to have
it out there.
Yeah. Yeah,
because I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but Finley did give me mentioned. Yeah, you know, there were some vulnerable moments that you guys kind of created in there, and to put it out there, it must have been a little bit nerve wracking, I'm sure, before sort of putting that out.
Yeah, and I think what Finley found difficult was being able to, you know, I think he wanted to make sure that he told my story in a way that I was happy with, and I wanted him to tell the story in a way that he was happy with, and that he wants, because, you know, we did like an interview.
He's your friend before, at the end of the day, right?
Yeah, and like, we did an interview before I left, and like, we chatted in that for like 2 hours, and you know, some stuff that we spoke in that, you know, we neither of us have spoken to each other about before, so it was then very difficult to kind of compress that down with all this other things around it into a 30 minute kind of short film sort of thing. But he's done very well. So that comes out on the 16th, I want to say.
That was my next question. Like, when will it be out for people to be able to go and see it? So 16th.
Yeah. 16th on YouTube is when it goes live on there.
Okay. We'll make sure to put that on all the channels, because I was meant to go to the premiere. I haven't seen it, so I'm looking forward to that coming out and seeing that, because obviously we were chatting over the time, so I know what you guys were doing and where you were going. So it'll be. I love Finley's work. You always, as you say, such a good storyteller, and I'm sure there's going to be more to come from the two of you as far as this trip goes. I mean, any plans for meeting anyone else along the ride, or are you still figuring that one out?
Yes, I've had. I mean, people that I know, I met this guy in Turkey, or we both did, actually. And we've been trying to think of making something work in South America, but it might be difficult because I have like no idea realistically when I'm going to be there. I have like a ballpark, but I can't put a date on anything. And I've had other people that I know say, oh yeah, no, come over here. Like, I'll probably now do Ireland at the end and actually get the ferry from France to Ireland, go across Ireland, see my family, and then land in probably like Holyhead in Wales, and then cycle back from there. But yeah, other people, I've had some people message me in Malaysia. Weirdly, know a few quite. It seems like every Australian that I meet is from Melbourne.
That's the cycling capital.
Yeah, honestly, like I'm like, I meet them, I'm like, you're from Melbourne, and like 6 times out of 10 they say, probably more than that actually, maybe 70% really? Of the time they say, yeah, I'm from Melbourne.
It's so funny. I know a lot of Australians, and like the vast majority are from Sydney or Brisbane. I don't know a lot of Melbourneites, but there you go. Maybe they congregate in different parts of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, like that's the thing as well. Like, sometimes I think, you know, a lot of people from the same area will go to the same place. So almost, I think, you know, when you meet someone on, oh, I don't know, you probably have, because so many people have these stories, but you meet someone on like the other side of the world and you're like, huh, it's a small world. But like, it's it's probably not, because you've probably both had like similar upbringing, similar experiences, and that's both led you to wanting to go to that place.
Yeah, parallel paths almost. That you're kind of always going to bump into each other, because you, whether you knew it or not, you were actually on a track, the same tracks.
Yeah. Like I met this guy a few days ago whose best mate works at Rafa, and I think I've met him a few times. And I was thinking like, oh yeah, it's a small world, but then I don't know, I'm thinking of this because I was listening to this podcast. I think it was with like Neil deGrasse Tyson, and because like, you know, if you go up to someone in the street and you say, oh, "Do I know you?" and they say, "No," and you go, "Huh, big world." Like suddenly, all the small world experiences would seem very insignificant in comparison.
Yeah, they're not as serendipitous as people think they are. Yeah. It's just like, you know, sometimes it's just maths. But what are you generally listening to on the road? Is it music or podcasts? You just mix it up.
Yeah, I mix it up. I've told myself that I'm going to make like a absolutely banging playlist of everything that I've kind of been listening to on this trip. Because I mean, I'm a little bit biased, but it would be an amazing playlist. So yeah, music a lot of the time, sometimes podcasts. Like I like a few of the like Joe Rogan ones, just with when he's with guests that I'm interested in, you know, like scientists. Like I like things where I learn. So and those are so good because they're like 3 hours long. So you're like, I've got like 70K, 80K. Let me just put one of these on, and when that's finished, I'll be at my destination. And I think that's really
it's like the Rich Roll podcast as well. You know, you get these 2-3 hour podcasts, which, as you say, I'm sure great for the road. How many Ks have you done? Do you know?
Oh, it's probably 10,000, I reckon. Close enough to that. I think it was. I mean, like I've already ridden the equivalent of Land's End to John O'Groats in Vietnam. It's
2,000. That's like 2,000 Ks, right?
1,600.
1,600. Yeah. Oh, the road one. Yeah.
It's a massive country. Like, it looks small on the map, but it's so long. Like, it's just, you know, because unlike a normal map, you know, things at the equator are like squished down, and things, you know, further north or further south are kind of, you know, made to look bigger. And there's a really good resource, and you can drag countries around to see kind of where they'd look in other places. So I dragged Vietnam to Europe, and it's huge. Like the route that I planned here is just under 4,000 K. And like that's the equivalent of, you know, London to Istanbul. So it's a huge, huge country.
You just kind of think, oh, you'll be just quickly going through Asia, but when you actually look at the land area, the surface area, it's enormous.
And especially because it's been up in the mountains, you know, none of the roads are direct. They're all meandering and indirect, so it adds a lot.
So if you had to be put on the spot now, favorite place you've ridden so far, like best day on the bike as far as scenery and going, you know, like I like climbing mountains, riding mountains. Like what has been your... a clear highlight, if there has been one?
But I get that question quite a few times when like when I talk to people about what I'm doing, and that's happened, you know, more here, because like I say, in India it was, you know, lots of time kind of like more small talk, whereas here there's people that I can kind of hold more in-depth conversations with. And the difficulty with that question is like, you know, in what category, you know, like the best people that I've met on a day's ride, you know, the best ride scenic wise, the best day I've felt on the bike.
Well, let's say scenic, like scenery wise, has it been a day, or is it just all too varied to actually be able to just choose one?
I mean, there are highlight roads that there's been. And the most recent one, I mean, like Ha Giang up in the north of Vietnam is pretty incredible. But before that, I'd have to say there was this climb that I did through like a tea estate in Sikkim, and it brought me up to probably started around like 200 meters, finished about probably like 2,500 meters. But it was just like, it was stunning. Like it started pretty low down. You got the trucks, but then as you went higher, it got quieter and quieter. And then you got like meandering through this T estate on switchback after switchback. And as you got higher, you then also like saw the Himalayas like pop out from the mountains that were hiding it before. And I think it's called Kanchenjunga, which is the third highest peak in the world. You get a really good view of it from Sikkim. And you just see this like a huge mountain. Like when I first saw it, I was taken away, and I didn't know that it was that mountain. And just then I looked up.
The sheer size, the sheer mass of it.
Yeah. And it's like, it's so far away, but it's still huge. You know, I'm thinking like, okay, I'm at like, yeah, 2,500 meters. That mountain's like 8,400 and something. It's absolutely ginormous. And I think when you see, like, or I don't know, seeing mountains of that scale really, yeah, it really took my breath away. It's so special.
That's crazy. And that's so exciting. I mean, to think all the exciting places, like if you think about South America, all those other places you still got to get through, like some of the scenery you still got to see. I imagine that camera is getting a good work over.
Yeah. But like, you know, it's hard because here it rains. And so I put it in the bag. So I haven't actually used it kind of as much as I want to recently. And especially the last 3 days, like this is what I mean when you say that, like the last 3 days have been the best I've felt on the bike, because I spent all that time in the mountains, and now I've just come to like the flatlands. And like the other day I averaged over 30K an hour for my day. It's like, I was on fire.
With a fully loaded bike. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Your fitness must be, are you tracking anything with like a Garmin or a Whoop or something where you know where your fitness, or you're not really bothered by that? You can just feel it. But I mean, I'd be fascinated to know the numbers.
No, I mean, I've never used a power meter, and I know myself well enough to know that if I get a power meter, cycling will become way less fun.
So that's fair enough.
I've never thought of getting that. Even when I was leaving, like the guys at Wahoo asked if I wanted like the pedals. It's another thing to charge. That's not why I ride. You know, I ride to be outside and feel the wind in my on my face and the wind in my hair. And I did use a heart rate monitor up until probably like 10 days ago, because yeah, I think I needed to replace a battery, and then I've got loads of batteries, but I was like, actually, you know what? It's a little bit more comfortable to not wear this.
I've stopped wearing one as well. Funny enough, I ran out of battery, and then I was like, you know what? I don't need to, I'm not at that level. Like I could tell when I'm going too hard. My watch can tell me, et cetera. But no, I'm sure, going back to my original question, you're probably at this, you can just tell, you know your body so well by now. But yeah, being up in the mountains like that and then coming down to the flat was just like free watts getting down there, I'm sure.
But it's weird because, you know, it was the opposite in India. I found the flats so difficult. So difficult. Whereas here I was flying.
So what's the next country if everything goes to plan?
Yeah, so if everything goes to plan, I'd continue south and go around to Ho Chi Minh City and then into Cambodia. And I'd probably be in Cambodia for New Year's. I'd like to be in Ho Chi Minh for Christmas and then Cambodia for New Year's.
Okay. Well, I've just got open, because obviously a big part of what you're doing here is your mind map charity, mind mapping around the world. Yeah. I just opened the page and I see you're already at 80% at £8,000, which is amazing.
Yeah, I got an email the other day that I'm more like the top 1% of fundraising pages, because it's just people are supporting it so much. And that's like, I open that email and I'm like, wow. Like, I don't know how even to respond to it, because it just, yeah, makes feel good about what you're doing.
Exactly. And that's why it's like, I love the fact that we get to catch up and hear the stories, but then it also gives us a good opportunity to, you know, just remind people of what's, one of the reasons you're doing this, you know, and the purpose behind that. And we can sort of just send gentle reminders to people to, to head on over to Just Giving and, you know, throw a quid or two in the piggy bank.
It should jump up a bit as well, because Quark are holding a Christmas party. Maybe, I think it's next week. And all the tickets and money from the raffle are going to be donated to that.
Amazing. Oh, wow. Okay, that should, I'm almost certain. Yeah. Well, you'll reach your target, right, of 10,000, and you're not even halfway yet.
Yeah. I think I'm probably like, just on like maybe by 30%
of what of your journey. How does that make you feel?
Yeah, very excited.
Okay,
it makes me feel so excited. Like I guess, you know, if you asked me that at the beginning of India, I would have said it makes me pretty scared to think that there's such a long way to go. But now it just excites me more and more to just be on the road and being able to share these experiences with people that I meet and have things to remember.
Well, I imagine you're getting more comfortable with that, right? Like I would have found, I'm like you, I would have been quite shy and intimidated with all this. And that can be quite exhausting in itself, and especially in a place like India. But I'm assuming by where you are now, you've become desensitized, not the right word, because it's not a desensitized situation, but you're comfortable with it. And so it's become something you look forward to now where there's not apprehension like there might've been before.
Yeah. Like the thing that I've improved the most on since starting this is being able to ask someone for help. Like at the beginning, I'd be like, if I'd never ask someone. Yeah.
Just try and fix it yourself because you don't want to ask for help, right?
Yeah. I'd look on Google. I'd be on Google for ages. How do I fix this? But now it's like I feel so much more comfortable with going up to someone and saying, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. Please, can you help me? And if you say it to someone, like it takes, you know, most people are going to respond to that in a good way and help you.
9 out of 10, they're going to help you, and that 1 out of 10 is just, you know, what's the worst? They go no. And it's so weird how we're programmed to be so terrified of being rejected or turned down in all aspects of our life. I'm sure it'll be fascinating when you're back in you know, the Western world, back in London.
Yeah, and I think like in particular here in Vietnam, because you know the Vietnam War is pretty, still very recent, and I think for like a country to go through that and then have to come out the other side of it and rebuild and like grow together. Like there's such a strong community. Like everyone will help someone because they know what the alternative is to that. And so it makes it such a nice place to be, because the community is so strong. Everyone wants to help you out. And yeah, it's very refreshing. I mean, you know, we haven't had something like that in the UK, I think, to bring people together in that same way.
Yeah, they're sort of galvanizing. So from trauma comes triumph in a way, and I've heard similar experiences in countries like Colombia, where you know the drug wars and the terrible atrocities that have gone on there, how the community, because of those things, have pulled together, and it makes for such a warm and welcoming experience. But obviously our outside CNN view of it is still this, oh, you know, very dangerous place. And like everywhere, there's dangerous places, but it'll be fascinating to, when we catch up and you're in that part of the world, to hear how that, if you're having those experiences.
Yeah. I think the first place that really struck a chord with me, it wasn't on this trip. It was at the beginning of the year, I did the race around Rwanda. Mm-hmm. And I went to the Genocide Museum, and it was one of the hardest museums I've been to. But wow, the
I can't even imagine what that would have been like.
Yeah, but like the resounding message of it is like how the country was able to forgive and grow together, and you're kind of like how is that possible? And it is, and they did it, and now it's a beautiful, thriving country.
Yeah, it's almost like they feel like, well, what other choice do we have, right? We either stay in this this downward spiral, or we make that very difficult and brave choice to build up, to rebuild. And then I'm sure places like Vietnam and these countries that have had, unfortunate histories, with war, that they've been able to bounce back. And for you to be on your bike, ride through and experience that probably in a more tangible way than if you were just driving through or riding a bus, it really washes over you, I'm sure.
Yeah. Because, it's same as with India. Like, I'm in places that aren't, touristy areas, so you do get to spend time like in the communities. And the great thing here is that there's so many like homestays, so you can just like stay with the family and you chat to them about their life and what they do, and you eat the food that they eat every day and wake up at the time that they wake up every day. And it's really, it's so nice.
It sounds fulfilling, and it's transactional is a word that I love, because I think both parties are taking something away from that, which is beautiful. Well, mate, I can see we're already almost going on for an hour here, and I know in the back of my mind you have 200 Ks in your legs tomorrow. But as I say, I think we could just keep on chatting for ages, because there's just so much going on, and it's so good to catch up. And I just want to say bravo. It's going so well, and I've been loving following it on Instagram and the stories, and just that rhythm you're in now. It's wonderful to watch, and I can't wait to sort of catch up next time in a couple of weeks, wherever you are, off in January sometime, maybe see where you are and talk about the next chapter.
Yeah, for sure. It's weird, like all the time, like every few weeks, I think, I think I'm finally getting to grips with what I'm doing. And like, I remember I first saw that in Croatia, and then I thought it in Turkey, and then in India. And like, I feel that now as well. It's like, yeah, I think I'm finally getting used to it. And I think the fact behind that is like, I don't think I'll ever really get used to it.
Now, before you know it, you're home, you're like, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Maybe I was used to it the whole time. But, and that's kind of the whole point of it, is putting yourself in those situations where you are one toe every single day out of your comfort zone. Yeah. And that's what causes the growth. It's that, and being able to then take that. And that's something I've experienced in my own life, is that if you're able to, as my friend would say, lean in every day, if you're able to take that one toe out of your comfort zone, like that's where the growth is. That's where the experience is. And that's the memories are made. And when you look back, it's shaped who you are in a very positive way. So I can imagine you're just turbocharged that experience right now, because every few days, weeks, months, you're in a different place and getting a different version of that experience, which will just be, life-changing without question.
Yeah. I'm definitely getting more comfortable at not being comfortable.
Yeah, I think that's a superpower in itself, which is so cool. Well, buddy, man, it's so good to chat, dude. And let's stay in touch as we have been, and let's have another chat in a couple of weeks and see where you're at.
Yeah, for sure. Good to chat as always.
And there we go. Another great conversation with Boru. As I said, top of the show. I've really come to look forward to and enjoy these chats. And it's great to hear how he's been getting along. Just a couple of reminders from the show to please check out their charity, the Mind Mapping, that is doing such wonderful things. I'll put a link in the show notes. Go and throw a couple pounds or any other currency you might have laying around. I know it means a lot to Boru and really is a big motivator in him continuing on his trip, as well as the 16th, I think it is, their film will be coming out. So just keep an eye on the Gravel Junction socials, Boru's account, as well as Finley. Again, I'll put all of that in the show notes. That should be a great little film coming out in, what's the date now? In about 3-4 days. So do keep an eye out for that. Other than that, on a personal side, I'll be sharing a bit more of my writing that I've been doing. It is cycling-based, but more from a personal element, personal angle. Been using the Substack platform, blogging and newsletter platform. Don't worry, there's no paywall. It's still very much free. Don't think I have enough content there yet to warrant that sort of paywall. But I will be putting the links if anyone's interested in a slightly longer form writing. I'd love your feedback. For those of you who don't know, if you head over to www.thegraveljunctionpodcast.com, gravel.com. That's the graveljunctionpodcast.com. You'll find all our episodes, and at the bottom of each episode link or page is a comment section where you can write whatever you like, really. And if you have the time, I would love some feedback or comments or just general conversation. It's a great platform for that. But that's all we have time for this week. I say all we have time for. It's been a slightly longer show, so if you've stuck with us till the end, very much appreciate it. Right now, if you wouldn't mind just heading over to wherever you're listening to your podcast, drop us a little 5-star rating there. It goes so far in helping us get spotted and seen by other listeners who haven't yet discovered the wonders of the Gravel Junction podcast. Another good show for you next week. Everything going to plan, fingers crossed. Slightly different one than we normally do. A little more of a geeky, nerdy angle. I won't give away too much more than that. Perhaps you can fill in the gaps. But anyway, thanks again for joining us. As always, you keep riding. We'll talk soon. Bye for now.